Hello, everybody. This is Manar Rashwani, Syrian journalist, currently based at La Maison des Journalistes in France. I'm glad to have today Ms. Justina Mielkevich, who is an award-winning photographer. She's from Poland, but based in Tbilisi, Georgia since 2003. Her work has been published internationally by the New York Times, Newsweek, Le Monde, Stern, National Geographic, and Wall Street Journal, among others. She is a winner of the World Press Photo, Canon Female Photojournalist Prize, Caucasus Young Photographer Award by Magnum Foundation, Aftermath Project Grant, and Eugene Smith Fund in 2016. Also on May 3, the World Press Freedom Day, La Maison des Journalistes, the Polish Institute of Paris, and the Cultural Center of the Embassy of Ukraine in France jointly inaugurated an exhibition of Ms. Mielkevich photos on the facade of La Maison des Journalistes dedicated to the Ukrainian people resistance to the Russian invasion. Ms. Mielkevich's work is mainly devoted to personal long-term projects published as books. Her first book, Women with a Monkey, Caucasus in Short Notes and Photographs, was released in 2014. In 2019, she published her second book, Ukraine Runs Through It, which was shortlisted among the 20 best books by Paris Photo and Aperture. Thank you so much for joining us today. And before this interview, we had very interesting talk. But I would like also to highlight issues related to your work as a photojournalist in general, and of course, to your work in Eastern Europe, and especially Ukraine, that's showing the world unexpected and resistant to unjustified Russian aggression. But let me start with your work, because everybody usually sees the photos, but rarely to ask about the person behind the camera who decides to take this photo or that photo, who is in a close proximity to the people in these photos. Sometimes they are so happy people showing joy. Sometimes, like in the case of Ukraine, suffering from war and difficulties of becoming IDPs or refugees. So what makes photojournalists different from other journalists? And how can you describe your experience over the past years?
So the thanks for having me. Nice to meet you. Nice to meet the audience, whoever you are. Photography is just one of the tools available we have as a people, but also as a journalist specifically, to describe the world, to transform, pass further our experience. Some people write, some people record the sound, some people write the books, some people write short stories, and I photograph. I photograph and I write also, because my second Ukrainian book, half of the book, is the 10 reportages and stories about people I followed during the 5 years and through their lives, showing how Ukraine was changing and how Ukraine was experienced the Russian invasion, which in fact happened in 2014.
Yes.
And with this project here, you know, and this year, people, I was working for Wall Street Journal, photographing the war 2022, and a few people were interested to showing this work, but I was always saying, I was like in here, that I would show it, but only under condition that it's going to be showed together with the work I did since 2014. Because as I said, the war started there, and the experience, what Ukraine experiencing now, is something they're dealing before with, naturally with much less, smaller scale, because now it's like really total war across the whole Ukraine, you know, with the rockets flying to cities across Ukraine. So it's not anymore in the eastern part of the country, but it's all across the country. So who I am behind the photos? I'm just a person curious about the world. I am a person passionate to understand issues which interest me, and Ukraine was always one of them. And I am a person devoted to transfer my experience and my understanding and my finding to the bigger world outside. I am from Poland. I live in Georgia since 20 years. I experienced Russian invasion in Georgia in 2008. And as I said, I documented Ukraine for a long time. And this is something personal for me. This is the place where I live. This is the countries I care for. This part of the world I care for. This is the part of the world I think I understand very well. And being a person which believes nothing is disconnected from the rest of the world anymore in the 21st century, I think it's, I see it as kind of like my little mission to explain, you know, what is Ukraine? What is the perspective of Ukraine? What is the perspective of Georgia? Being a very small country, you know, we don't have so much, and Ukraine doesn't have so much power as Russia and so much money to spread their own message. You know, when you put in Google, for example, city Mariupol or Azovstal, which was a big news, like really, you understand the massive of a power of Russian information war, you know?
Yes, of course.
You get first links from their sources, and the most links from their sources. So, you know, and I'm a very seasoned journalist. I'm very good in researching. And I see how year after year, internet become like an ocean of garbage, how hard it is to research for me. Something I could research before in 1 hour, now I might spend 3 days to compare sources, to look for sources, to be able to build a picture of what's the situation of things I'm researching. So it's a kind of, it's not, so the, in the real world, I'm that. I'm also a mother, I'm a funny person, I like to eat, I like to drink, I want to become a painter like all my life, so I'm still waiting for this, so it's around the corner when I stop being a photographer and become a painter for the last 20 years, so that's it, you know, but I'm a person passionate about the world, curious about this, and
But sometimes we talk a lot about like objectivity, and maybe journalists in general needs to be, sometimes they say, neutral. But do you agree that any journalist, and this is especially based on what you have just mentioned, need to be the person with a message? I mean, to convey truth, as you said, the Russians used to dominate the internet, mostly with fake news, I would say, and to justify their aggression and atrocities. So is it our work as journalists also to contribute to the to be with a message to show what's happening actually on the ground, rather than being just in neutral, comparing with what's happening?
I think as a journalist, objectivity is a tool we should all strive to implement and follow. In the sense then we come without the agenda to the place and we explain what's happening. What I think is more important is like we record the first person human experience. A lot of journalism is being done today as in a distance, when exactly it's almost like jongleering, you know, the information from here. I think we should restore the credibility of printed media, of media with the history, which have the whole group of people fact-checking things. Historical facts, locations, distances even. It's very important. So the media which like even Reuters, big companies, you know, their credibility is the accuracy.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I would rather talk the truth, the objectivity could be an abstract word which can be easily manipulated.
Mm-hmm.
But accuracy, as something which is not that easy to, you know, if you're accurate about the location, about the distance, about the names, if you're as a reporter recording, then I think it's like you, there's a more chances than you create something closer to the truth, objectivity or things like this. So yeah, certain responsibility, objectivity. Yeah, I think it's like we have to strive for this, but we are humans, we have emotions, we like people, we dislike people. It's the same with our you know, and I believe the really guiding line, then as I said during our talk, it's like we as humans, you know, there are certain things which are bad and certain things which are good. Like killing, destroying other person's life without the reason, those should be called bad things. So as I said during our talk, there's a certain things which are bad, certain things which are good. Then it's like, you know, I think talking about objectivity is like talking about the moon. But we have other description of, you know, it's like there's a truth, there's a lie, there's a good and there's a bad, you know. And I think there are better words to operate and implement when we talk about journalism.
Yeah, but as you were talking also about like providing like an accurate narrative about what's happening in Ukraine now and since 2014. Of course, the war, the Russian war started in Ukraine since 2014. We had this exhibition of your work here at Maison des Journalistes. What it means to you to have this exhibition at Maison des Journalistes in Paris, which hosts exiled journalists from different countries in the world?
You know, for me, it's like the House of Journalists exhibition. It's part of also the extension of this is a Paris City Hall. And both are outside, very beautiful big prints outside with the text. And seeing people stopping and reading, I love it, you know. Because really, as a journalist, it's like we go to the underground and we do our work. And we very often don't know what's going to happen. We don't know, is it going to touch somebody or not. So it's like we kind of send it to the world. And sometimes it is being seen, sometimes it's not. So then it's being seen by very different people. I like the idea of the kind of this democratic approach. Then this is not for like kind of gallery only audience or the subscribers to the paper, but it's very random people, very different views can see it. So I really like this idea. I like the idea. It's like I learned today about the House of Journalists, you know. Maybe I'm not crazy about the French politics in Georgia or Ukraine, but French is very strong about supporting journalism, you know, really in all aspects.
Yes.
Even that by printing press, still being a big market for us, a photographer, to be able to make a living. So it's a, I think this is fantastic that there is such a place. And it's really reaching out to all these different aspects of journalism, you know. On one side is exiles, and I'm not exiled, but I show the current politics, and then it's all kind of melts into one.
Of course, what we display outside the building of Maison des Journalistes is just a few of many photos you took while you were in Ukraine. But what makes these photos like so special, and do you think they reflect different aspects of the war? Or
you know, I show war, you know, I show a war. For me, a war is just a part of the picture, a part of the human lives. War never stops other people, other activities. You still have a family, you still have to take your kids to kindergarten. If it doesn't work, you have to find a place to take care of your kids. If you have to work, if you still have a work, you have to make a living, you have to balance, you're gonna go to the army or have your it's like all the aspects of everyday life distorted by war, but they continue. And in my people still, you know, get tired. Even soldiers needs to go to have a rest to be effective soldiers, and they go take their kids for holidays or they bath on a river site, you know. So I pay attention to all these aspects, because I think if war is being shown only by ruins and blood, of this kind of ultimate tragedy of the war. It also, people become less sensitive, outside viewers become less sensitive, because how many times you can relate yourself to some ruins which means nothing for you. They're just another ruins, or just another red blood, or just, when is the story about the person, when is the person about, when the person becomes like you, with life, which so is being taken by war, people can relate better, I think. Yes. And then I, with my work in Ukraine, I did before, I did hear that I was in States or somewhere showing the work, and people were like looking, there was a, here's a war, here's a river situation, here's the people eating, here's people having fun, here's people in a funeral. And then people were telling me, oh, they're like us, you know?
Yes.
Or I also include a lot of women. I don't do it because I have some kind of, how say, quotas in my, you know? But I'm a woman and I'm natural. It's natural for me, I think, more maybe. And there were people asking, oh, there's so many women in your photographs. I thought the Ukrainian war and revolution is only about men thing, because they've seen the barricades and the fire.
Yes.
But it's a huge amount of women participating in this war effort as volunteers, as fighters, as everything, you know? So, yeah, it's like a full picture, you know? Then I think there's like, in media, like too much maybe shortcuts, you know?
And actually also, I believe, and sometimes when we show that people insisting on practicing their like ordinary life, this is maybe the highest level of resistance. Exactly.
Absolutely.
That we are here to stay, and it's like sometimes it's message that
absolutely
we're gonna resume our life as usual. As
then life is stronger than death, exactly. You know, then this is like, we cared for this place, it's our place and it's us.
Yes.
Yeah.
But as we're still talking about Ukraine and you were documenting like life through photos in Ukraine since 2014. While everybody in the world, I would say, was surprised by the Ukrainian resistance, maybe it was like everybody was expecting Ukraine to fall in a few days. But for somebody like you who was documenting the life in Ukraine, was the Russian, the Ukrainian resistance really a surprise, or you were expecting something like this? Especially you mentioned somewhere that this divide between the East and the West of Ukraine, and this Russian-speaking group versus non-Russian-speaking group, is something irrelevant anymore. And now we are talking about really very united Ukrainian people.
I think we definitely talk about even more united Ukrainian people now. In 2014, I watched, like, it was the same invasion, a war, and volunteers, like civilians, which were on the Maidan in the Revolution of Dignity, they went volunteering to the army. There was a whole army of volunteers providing, the army didn't have equipment or anything, with medicines, with the weapons, with like whatever, like flat jackets, helmets, you know, the all extra stuff the soldiers need. They only get the weapons, and the all extra stuff was the volunteers buying, collecting money, medicines, even feeding them. Really, the whole nation, not the whole nation, but everybody got united behind this effort of resisting Russia, and they managed in 14 to stop them somehow. Now in 2022, since then, the Ukraine managed to build the army, you know, they have experience army, but still all the volunteers, you know, when war started, I went to the blood donation place, all the people donating, those are huge lines. Many people were like, did it last time in 2014 or 2015. I met, war started when I was in Dnieper. I met with the friend there, which in 2014, she lost the boyfriend. He died in one of the battles. She found him through the Bureau of Lost People. And she started working, volunteering in this bureau for 2-3 years, helping other families.
Yes.
And in the same time, working at the university. And then I met her now in 2022, we had the coffee, she gave me flat jackets because the war's kind of coming. And to work with Wall Street Journal, I needed to have the gear. You cannot buy anything in Ukraine anymore. Rent, all the flat jackets, everything was gone, you know, yeah, before the war. Next day, war. I woke up in Dnieper, war. An overnight war started. She was already there. She dropped her university work, everything. All the volunteers from 14, 15 women mostly were there collecting already stuff for refugees. Medicines, making the first aid boxes for soldiers, register, everything. Like immediately the system was in place. So this resistance came from that. I think COVID helped a little bit. COVID really created online platform. The governments learn how to be on a work online. I think it helped. It's not, you know, it was just there, schooling. So that. And with the Western analysis, you know what? The Western analysis have one problem. They're very rational. There's something, what I called the patriotism, the unity of the nation. It's a wild card, which is not being covered by analysis, Western analysis. And I think there's a potential of this wild card in every nation. So that's why they really miscalculated Ukraine, because then they, you know, I think people which was in Ukraine 14, 15, and they understand that, they were not surprised. And it's like suddenly the system of volunteering, the people signing up for the army line, you know, those are more people than weapons, you know?
Yes.
And it's true, you know? So it's a wild card of, I'll call it the patriotism, you know? The football hooligans, you know, like the very extreme right with the extreme left anarchists, they together in one unit, you know? Yeah. They put their weapons down, you know, the peaceful time, they united, you know? So it was just really, yeah, I think I've seen it as unprecedented in 14, 15. The system was in place, they implemented this. But of course, the Russia is throwing so much, you know, iron and metal on Ukraine, like really, like it's like throwing it, you know, it's not, these rockets are not precise anymore. There's not on the army, it's the civilians are being, you know. So I'm stuck in a bad cartoon, you know, when some bad guy is just dropping on you tons of metal and you have to kind of hold it, you know. So, of course, without the support of the West, the defense weapons, they will not be able to. It will be hard, you know. It's like every day, Zelensky said, you have 50 to 100 soldiers dying and 500 wounded. Now, because now it's a peak of the fight every day, you know.
Yeah.
How much longer they can go, you know. And so, it's all wrong, you know. It's like every day is a cost of 50 to 100 lives and 500 wounded people, you know. So,
are you afraid? And this is my last question, because now, you know, we talk about the news cycle, and although the war is just next door in Europe, but are you worried that people could slowly, as the war continues, lose interest in the war in Ukraine? And pay more, stop paying attention to the price the Ukrainians are paying in defending their country?
It's a problem with every war, you know, out Syria, you know,
of course.
Even Afghanistan was completely forgotten the moment Ukraine was attacked, you know. I think it's a kind of extension of responsibility of the citizens of the country to keep the drum beating. The thing is, the Ukrainians have a huge old diaspora, America, Canada, Europe, and now they have a huge diaspora of the recent refugees. I think and hope these people will not allow to forget, because they live within the communities in Europe, all across the world. So then they'll keep the drum beating and like reminding their close communities, the neighbors, then it's still going on, you know. And Bucha was just one, but it's like it's happening all over the place, you know. Then this is the only hope, you know, the kind of, I would say, maturity of the Western government, responsibility, you know, then looking beyond just next election. Then it's something maybe bigger, we can reorganize world better now.
Yes.
And the kind of persistence of the Ukrainian diaspora and the friends, you know, because there's still a lot of, you know, I mean, yeah, but yeah.
Thank you so much.
My pleasure.
It was a great pleasure having you today and talking to
Same
you.
Here.
Thank you so much.